Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. Unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties. I do apologize for that, but I am here now. And today we have a very special show coming for you today. We're going to be talking about the Brazilian Maniac. That's right, for all of you out there who've been tracking our show's progress. We've been covering some of the more nasty individuals, I dare say, from American history. And today will prove to be no exception. So prepare yourselves, if you will, for another journey down into the nasty, nasty past. So without further ado, let's get started. So who is Pedro Rodriguez Filho? Well, he was a very dark figure, to say the very least. And again, I do apologize for the lack of fanfare, but I did have a little bit of technical issues, if you will. But Pedro Rodriguez Filho was born on a farm in Santa Rita do Sapucaí in southern Minas Gerais state. And he suffered an injured skull, the result of beatings dealt to him over his years of growing up, at the hands of his father. His father was a very abusive individual, and actually abused his mother whilst he was actually in the womb. It is said that his first urge to kill happened at the age of 13, and took place during a fight with an older cousin. He pushed the young boy into a sugarcane press, and the boy almost died. Now, at the age of 14, it's said that he murdered the vice mayor of Alfenas because his father, a school guard at the time, accused of stealing the kitchen's food. So, nonetheless, you can see from a very early age that he was very unpleasant individual, and he earned a variety of nicknames over his long career as a criminal. He is said to have killed about 70, anywhere from 71 to 80 people. Now, he was born on June 17th in 1954. And not only was he the victim of abuse through the abuse of his father, his mother really didn't do much as far as protecting him. Now, he was eventually convicted of killing 71 people, but he was accused of an additional 21 attempts, and supposedly there's the chance that he even killed an additional 30 or more people. Now, following the murder of the vice mayor, a month later he killed another guard at the school whom he believed to be the real thief, who had cost his father his job. And after killing them, he took refuge in Sao Paulo, where he started to burglarize local slums. He also killed a drug dealer during the burglary spree, and at Sao Paulo, Filho met a woman named Maria Aparecida Olimpia, who would later become his fiancée. Now, at some point, she was brutally murdered by gang members. Becoming enraged by this, Filho committed a massacre during a wedding organized by the gang's leader, where he and some friends brutally killed 7 people and injured 16 others. Now, months after this massacre, he discovered that the boyfriend of his favorite cousin had impregnated her but refused to marry her, and he fatally shot him in revenge. Now, throughout all these violent encounters, he managed to elude capture at the hands of the police. He later found out that his father was in prison for supposedly murdering and dismembering his mother with a machete. He visited his father in prison and later murdered him by stabbing him 22 times. After the murder, he carved his heart out and he took a bite out of his father's heart. He continued to kill a number of criminals and would finally be arrested on May 24th of 1973. After his arrest, he was placed in a car with another criminal who was accused of committing sexual assault, and he murdered this individual. During his incarceration, Filho continued to kill people whilst he was in prison, claiming the lives of at least anywhere from approximately 47 to 55 inmates. Now, he sometimes killed inmates because of his past as a killer of criminals, which caused a majority of the prison population to hate him. In one attack by other inmates, Filho was ambushed, but he killed three of his attackers and injured the other two. So by no stretch, by any and all accounts, this is a very vicious individual, not one to be trifled with. Other inmates were chosen randomly. One of his victims was his cellmate, a career criminal, whom he killed simply because the man supposedly snored too much. Some of his victims he killed because, according to him, the thrill of killing another criminal was wonderful and satisfying. He enjoyed the challenge, and quite frankly, those people disgusted him. Interestingly enough, Filho was almost released from prison at one point, though I find this, I approach this with a great deal of skepticism, but supposedly in 2003, there were discussions of his release, but he was turned down, but this was turned down because of his murders that had continued to take place inside of prison, which, yeah, duh. But before we get into that, I would also like to remind everybody that we do have a call-in number. It's 718-508-9883. And before we get to the rest of his crimes, I do want to take another look, a little bit more of a closer look at his modus operandi, you know, sort of the way that he liked to go after his victims, and really some more of the motivations that he had as far as killing people, you know, and whether he was more of a sort of a career criminal or not. So before we get to that, I think it's important that we do back up just a little bit. Now, I mentioned before that he had a very colorful relationship with his father. And that is putting it a bit mildly. Early life, we didn't really cover quite as well, so I do want to backtrack before we continue on with the number of his murders, one of the things that I find particularly fascinating about this individual is some of the ways that people have really looked at him. We kind of look at him in terms of the sheer volume of his murders. You know, some of the guys we've had on that we've talked about on my show, we've kind of looked at them and they've kind of seemingly had sort of a more focused purpose. But Pedro Rodriguez Filho really, it's so much different. It's not the same. Yes, he targeted, you know, a lot of his victims are criminals, but and he starts at such a young age. But even so, you look at the way that he, you might say that one of the reasons why he's such a violent individual and he performs such violent crimes against people is because of his early life experience with his father. But he grew up much like the everyday person in Brazil would have grown up during this time. He was born in 1954 and grows up on a farm in rural Brazil, and life is difficult for him growing up. He and his father and his mother are laborers on a farm, and this is not uncommon for this time. We know that in his earlier years, his formative years, he and his family helped to harvest sugarcane, and they had a very rough go of it. They had a very rough time of it. Growing up, working on a sugarcane farm is not an easy lifestyle by any stretch of the imagination. For those of you unfamiliar with the growth of sugarcane and the process in which it's harvested, it's a very tough process. It's generally cut by hand with machetes. It has to be refined and boiled in large hot pots. And much of this work is very menial, very hands-on, very much a laborious task. So, and people that lived in rural areas and worked these sorts of jobs often did so as a family unit, and all had to sort of pull their own weight. So from a very young age, he's going to be in a very hostile environment. And not just hostile by father was, rather violent, but also the people around him are going to be not so savory individuals most of the time. They're going to be lower class, uneducated laborers like himself. Important to note that, unlike many of the people we've covered on the show in the past, Pedro Filho is not really like the other serial killers we covered, in that his modus operandi is really to target people who he believes are either criminals or people who really are the lower spectrum of society in the way that we would view them. They're not good people. It's kind of hard to feel sorry for his victims. Almost all of his victims are criminals. They're almost all exclusively criminals. So you might classify him as less a random murderer of innocent people and more or less a vigilante, even though he is quite unstable and unhinged as an individual. He's not only called the Brazilian maniac, he's also known as Padrino Matador. And the murders that he committed exclusively take place in Brazil. He's very active from the year 1968 to 2003. And again, as I said earlier, the number of kills that he performs is anywhere between 70 to 100 or 100 more. It's a little bit difficult to calculate because, he was pretty active, and there are certain crimes that he was not able to be tied to simply due to a lack of evidence. But that being said, his victims tended to not be helpless individuals that serial killers tend to target. They tend to target people who are weaker, easier to prey on. He chose his victims specifically from among those that he saw as needing justice, or be it a sort that matched his own interpretation of the word. Now, interestingly enough, after his early murders, and making a career in burglary to sort of make ends meet. He actually got involved with some of the local gangs that were in Brazil at this time, who tended to run the little rural towns and little urban neighborhoods that were developing called barrios. And he there ran afoul of some of the local gangs whilst he was making his career in burglary. And once he did, he found it very problematic that these individuals were sort of running things and that they were criminals. And he began murdering them. He started with a local drug dealer. And after that, and I mentioned before that somebody he knew was killed by gang members. This sent him on a spree of torture and murder. Could find the people responsible. And as his killings continued, they became increasingly focused on criminals and tended to be less random or emotionally driven. Before the age of 18, Pedro had killed more than 10 people, anywhere from 15 to 30 people. Now, again, I did mention that he did actually eviscerate his own father. He cut his heart out and took a bite out of it. And he is officially arrested in 1973. And whilst he's in jail is when he begins the bulk of his killings. Now, it's the rough estimate on the people that he killed in prison is roughly 47. And these people all died for the most part because Philho just believed that they deserved to die. He gained a reputation for promising openly to people that they would die. He actually made a habit of letting criminals in jail with him know that he would, in fact, he was going to kill them. He was eventually convicted of a total of 71 murders, although he claimed to have killed more than 100 people. And judging by the fact that he was openly declaring to prisoners from his cell, between people locking him up and taking him out of the general population, he pretty much made good on the promise that he was going to murder people. He would eventually be sentenced to 30 years in prison, which is actually, at the time, the maximum allowable in Brazil, making it possible, although, albeit I approach this with a lot of skepticism, that he could achieve parole. And the reason I say that I approach this with a lot of skepticism is, let's face it, when you've killed 47 people, you're probably not getting out of jail, especially if you killed 47 people while you were in jail. His sentence was extended slightly due to the murders that he committed, called up debates from amongst the law enforcement officials in the area, as to, and in particular, the people involved in the prison system and the court systems in Brazil as to what they were going to do with this guy. Like, honestly, again, this goes back to what I was saying. Once you started killing people, after you've been incarcerated, it's a little difficult for us to want to let you out of prison. I mean, you did kill like almost 50 people while you were in jail, and that's not counting all the people you killed outside of jail. But I digress. Let's see here. I apologize. One of the interesting things about Philho is that he actually became notorious in Brazil for promising the murder of other criminals, including doing so once he came up for parole, when there were actually discussions of parole for him eventually coming about after serving 30 years in prison. And this came up in actually most recently in 2003, so 14 years ago, he actually He actually threatened to kill a famous serial killer from Sao Paulo named Francisco de Assis Pereira, who was known for cannibalizing, who was known for claiming that he was going to cannibalize his victims, and was active from about 1996 to 1998. Got arrested in August of 1998, called the Park Maniac, and he eventually actually got isolated from the general population because on December 18th in 2000, 2 years after his incarceration, our friend Pedro and it's said that a few other inmates actually tried to murder him. So, interestingly enough, Pedro Rodriguez Stillhill was a guy that intended to make good on his promise to murder people. He openly promised to murder Francisco de Aziz Perea once he laid eyes on him, and this prompted them to actually separate him, making it a rare occasion, apparently, for the Brazilian police force to actually heed the warnings of a guy who's going around killing people in prison. Now, I want to get more in depth with Pedro and look a little bit more at his process of killing people. Definitely want to take a look more at his sort of his modus operandi, I should say, the sort of motivations behind his killings and the way that he went about doing it, some of his known victims. But before we do that, we got to take a commercial break. And again, guys, I do apologize for sort of the abrupt start to the show, but some reason, station's been a little bit funky this week. It's been a little bit hectic, technical. So, technically for me, I'm not as savvy as I would like to be, but this happens. So before we take the commercial break, I'd like to remind you all that here at Totally Driven Entertainment, we do have a proud new sponsor. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Do check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for some much lighter, much more. But in the meantime, I'll send you guys on commercial break. And when we come back, we'll look more at Pedro Rodriguez's, not necessarily his motivations, but the way in which he killed people, and a little bit more at the specifics on who he targeted and why he targeted those people specifically.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromHolmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Again, I want to extend my sincerest apologies to the abrupt start to it, but now we're back on track. I always like to remind everybody that we do have a guest call-in number at 718-508-9883. Before the break, we were talking about the tumultuous start of Pedro Rodriguez Filho's life, otherwise known as the Brazilian Maniac. But when we get down into this guy's life, you realize that this guy is kind of like the Punisher, just the Brazilian version. Filho was described by psychiatrists as the perfect psychopath, though others preferred to classify him more or less as a sociopath instead. There was a psychological report that diagnosed him with paranoid and antisocial traits. Some suggested that he was an avenger-slash-vigilante-type serial killer with great intelligence and an almost photographic memory, who built all of his identity over his murder. So we take a look at his criminal record, so to speak. In around 1967, he allegedly pushed his cousin into a sugarcane press and killed him. In 1968, he murdered the vice mayor of Alphinus with a shotgun. He then killed an unnamed school guard with a shotgun as well. From the year 1969 to 1973, he got involved with some of the barrio gangs and murdered an unnamed drug dealer. He then found himself at a cartel wedding where he proceeded to go Punisher. He started firing indiscriminately into crowds of criminals. He shot seven of the gangsters at this gathering. He also attempted to kill another 16 people at this wedding. I believe this is in 1970, although the dates are a little shaky on that. Nonetheless, these individuals survived. These other 16 individuals survived. However, they are injured. Some of them quite seriously. He, of course, I mentioned, murdered his father. He stabbed his father 22 times, ripped out his heart after he died, and then ate it, or ate a piece of it at the very least. He, of course, also killed a man who impregnated his cousin by shooting him. He also killed at least 11 unnamed criminals, all killed in various ways. Important to note that Filho is sort of spurred on to murdering people at a higher rate after the loss of it is believed to be the loss of his fiance, but it's just the loss of somebody that he knew. The the details of that are sort of shaky. We're not really sure whether or not we believe Phil Ho on that, but his subsequent revenge killings are drastically demonstrate a drastic change in his personality. He's a very prolific serial killer who sees himself as sort of righting wrongs in the public. On May 24th of 1973, he murdered the rapist that was being that got transported to his cell. And we're not really sure the exact details of how he killed the guy, but it's suggested that he beat him to death. Interestingly enough, Pedro was known for actually using the MO of people who were murderers before they were imprisoned. He actually killed people much in the same way that they had inflicted things upon people he would inflict it upon them, suggesting that basically he had this sense of turnabout's fair play. You did this to somebody else, I'm going to do it to you. I mentioned earlier that he attempted to kill the park maniac Francisco de Aziz Perea, but is unsuccessful. He is, however, almost successful in killing another serial killer named Joaya Ocasio de Costa, a serial killer slash burglar, whom he bludgeons violently with just something that he found laying around. He picks up a blunt object that he finds near him and just pummels him with it until he sends him to the infirmary. He also made an attempt on the life of Hasmani Ramos, another murderer. There's another individual who was in for murder whom he decapitated with a knife that he somehow came across, most likely something that he had smuggled to him or stole from somewhere else. He killed two of his cellmates, one for snoring too loudly, according to him. The other, it's unclear what he killed him for, probably just because he felt like it. He also killed three other inmates who remain unnamed, supposedly that they attempted to attack him. I don't know what they were thinking, but it didn't work out for them. They all died. Two of them he is believed to have actually physically beaten to death with his bare hands. I almost hate to chuckle at that, but you would think that after he killed all these other people, these other guys in jail with him would have seen that as a sign not to mess with him, especially after he had murdered his cellmate for snoring too loudly. This is a guy I wouldn't have even made eye contact with going down the hall for lunch or whatever, what have you. I would have hoped and prayed and just kept to myself the whole time that he didn't single me out. But apparently these guys took exception to him killing other criminals, and they all paid the ultimate price for it because he beat them to death. And then there were another two inmates who he attempted to kill, but both were survived. Both had survived, but were grievously injured, both of them violently beaten. And one of them actually left in pretty rough shape, suffered a lot of broken bones. The other individuals whom he killed in prison, there were at least another 40 unnamed inmates who we don't necessarily know exactly who they are. I guess the prison was loaded with people during this time, whom he killed in a variety of ways, sometimes adopting their MOs, other times just simply beating them to death with whatever happened to be handy. He tended to kill people whom he truly believed deserved to die. That's really just one of the strangest things about him. So Phil Ho himself tended to look up various kinds of criminals
by looking up their names and addresses before brutally murdering them. And this is before he's in prison. So before his imprisonment, when he started attacking gang members, he actually just would capture people, torture them violently, and force them to give up information about where these other criminals were. He was known for sort of tracking people down by their address, breaking into their house, and breaking bones, typically, you know, legs or hands, and then forcing them to divulge where their compatriots were, where their fellow comrades were in crime. And once they divulged this information, he beat them to death, or he stabbed and hacked them to death with machetes. While outside prison, he was pretty effective in getting to the people he wanted to kill. He was usually spurred to act after hearing a crime was committed. And in some instances, while he was on the outside, he would capture criminals, typically mostly career criminals and drug dealers, whom he would learn about either by following them, following the news very closely, or again, by torturing them to death whenever he was motivated to do so, to get information. And he tended to be very upset. He found himself very upset with people that he was going after. He found them to be a plague on society, and he saw himself as removing these individuals. Now, on occasion, he would change his MO by adopting the MO previously used by his victims during the commission of their own crimes, such as when he killed his father or when he killed seven people in a single day. Typically, as I said, Silho tended to target people by simply looking up their names and addresses through torture. He would capture a local thug. He would beat him so savagely that the poor man would give up his friends, their families, whoever they happened to know, whoever they thought would appease Pedro. This would not appease him. He would ultimately murder this person and then track down the next person who he was going to kill. He would then break into their house. He would subdue them. And either by beating them to death or hacking them to pieces, he would ultimately get them to divulge where his next victim was going to be. And when this proved to be less fun for him, he typically just took on whatever they had done to people. He just inflicted this upon them, seeing this as a sort of karmic form of justice in his mind. And he became very, very good at this. So, ultimately, he was confirmed to have killed 71 people for absolutely certain. He claimed to have killed a total of 100 people. When questioned about the murders that he'd committed, he claimed that he killed 100 people. Just outright said, I killed 100 people. He was sentenced to 128 years in prison in the year 2003, although the Brazilian law system prohibits anybody from spending more than 30 years behind bars. But due to the crimes he committed inside the prison, namely the fact that he killed, 40-plus people in jail, his sentence was changed to over 400 years in prison, which, if we're being perfectly honest, you're not going to, it's pretty obvious he's not going to live to be 400 plus years old, but if we're being perfectly honest, you might as well have just made this guy a kid in a candy store, because it's pretty clear he likes to kill criminals. So I almost feel like the Brazilian justice system not only failed in this regard, he's basically being used by the Brazilian government to just sort of weed out people in their prison, is what it seems like. He was set to be released in 2007 after 34 years in prison. According to information from the Brazilian National Security Force, Intel, it indicates that he went to to the northeastern portion of Brazil in Fortaleza in Ceará. And on September 15th in 2011, local media from Santa Catarina published that he had been arrested in his home. Supposedly, he had been released in 2007, and he was later arrested again, where he worked as a housekeeper. According to that, he will serve time for accusations such as rioting and false imprisonment. Besides the number of killings, however, that he had committed, he was known for his threats of needing to kill people. Ultimately, though, I think one of the things that we can really take away from Pedro Rodriguez Filho is that he was not a man to be trifled with, for certain. One of the things that's particularly interesting about his case is not simply that he was a vigilante, but was the fact that he was able to kill so many people over the course of his life, and he was able to be so effective in doing so. You look at somebody like this, you wouldn't think that this is an individual who's going to last a long time. You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, we've talked about a lot of notorious individuals on my show in the past, and it tends to not go very well for them. You know, they don't tend to survive for very long. These are not people that, you know, live long lives. You know, they tend to go to jail and then die very quickly. So, you know, people like this, so often they don't last very long in prison, yet this individual actually did. He managed to not only kill a lot of people, but he managed to really, for the most part, you might even say, despite the fact that he got imprisoned, he kind of almost really eludes justice in a way, because he spends his time in jail kind of still doing the exact same he was doing when he was out of jail. Now, it's debated as to what really sparked him as being such a violent person. And as far as from what we know, he's still alive today and still imprisoned. And it's unlikely that he's ever going to get out of prison, but it's still debated as to what really initially caused him to be such a violent person. Now, a lot of people have said that the injury to his skull, the malformed skull that he was born with, had put undue pressure on his brain, and this made him more likely to be violent. But I disagree with that. I think that there's more to it than that. I think that's simply a cop-out on the part of people who have looked at this guy. Ultimately, I think what we can look at as having been the ultimate motivating factor for him as a murderer and as a practicing serial killer who really focused on a life of almost exclusive vigilanteism and really just outright violence in general, is that he grew up in an environment that was really cruel. You know, here's a young man who grows up in a situation that is already violent. He grows up in an abusive household. And this is right off the bat. He grows up in a very violent neighborhood, an abusive household to top it all off, and then loses his a loved one, Maria Aparecida Olympia, a woman whom he met, became smitten with and lived with, to violence. And this ultimately, you can see that all these things come together to form a perfect storm of violence. This is a person who was exposed to violence basically from the time he was born to the time that he grew up into an adult. So his whole life is a storm of violence. He's exposed to violent gangs who are dealing drugs around him, and he sees violence really as a means to an end, as a means to sate the desire that he has to right the wrongs in the world that he sees around him. And ultimately, he's a pretty successful murderer, if you want to call him successful. I mean, I guess successful is probably not the best word to use for him. I mean, he is a serial killer. But as far as, you know, his victims, for the most part, by and large, his victims are criminals. People who are already in jail for violent crime. A number of the people that he went to jail and murdered were murderers themselves. And when he was out of jail, predominantly his predominant victims were drug dealers. So it's almost kind of hard to really feel sorry for the people that he actually targeted, but it's also kind of, it kind of makes you feel very conflicted about him, because there's no question Pedro Rodriguez Filho is a very despicable individual. He's a murderer. He killed, you know, almost 80 people that we know of, and claimed to have killed another 20 people. He attempted to kill a number of other people, and taking the law in his own hands and being as violent as he was, and certainly taking a bite out of his own father's heart is kind of a warning sign right off the bat. But it's pretty clear that this is not, that he shouldn't be, you know, lifted up as a great individual, because he's definitely not a great individual. But it's also pretty clear that he is a perfect storm of violence, and he is a great example of what can happen when a person is exposed to such cruelty and such violence at a young age. Ultimately, I think it can't be overstated enough that this guy is a very remarkable and exceptional case when we look at serial killers. He's not your prototypical murderer. You know, people that we've covered before, and just most recently, you know, we covered the Rasta Ripper, and you know, Andre Chikatilo was a sick, deranged individual himself. But rather than targeting criminals, he targeted women and children. I mean, he was a very cruel, crude man who targeted people for his own sexual inadequacies and his own physical inadequacies that he suffered from. He projected those violent feelings that he had towards himself onto other people. He felt that his ineptitude required that he take out his angers, his frustrations, his shortcomings on other people, that they had to suffer for his feelings. Whereas this individual, Pedro Rodriguez Filho, took out his frustrations with a world that he viewed as creating him, a violent world that took away not only somebody that he valued as a person, somebody he was, who he cared about, but also the fact that he, you know, from an early age, he is sort of put in a situation where it's kind of like fight to survive, which is a very difficult situation to be in. Most of us today, I think it's fair to say that the majority of my listenership, me included, we really haven't had to, you know, grow up in a situation, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but, you know, if you live in America, you know, in most cases, you don't really have to scrape and claw and fight to survive every day on a day-to-day basis. You know, you don't live in a situation where you're having to scrape to make your way in life to survive. You're not surrounded by violence 24 hours a day. If you are, I really feel bad for you, and I hope you find a way out of that situation. I hope you're not in that situation. But this individual grew up in a area that was controlled by violent individuals, that was controlled by very combustible factions, and ultimately decides that he's going to do something about it. And his doing something about it led him on a path of blood and destruction, the likes of which has really not been replicated, and we should definitely hope is never replicated, because, again, this guy, he earned his name, the Brazilian Maniac. There is no question about it. So, but that's all I've got for you guys on Pedro Rodriguez Filho, and I hope you guys enjoyed what you learned about this guy. Ultimately, I really can't overstate it enough. You certainly don't want to glorify somebody for doing, you know, violent crime, but it's not easy to look at a person who is like this, who targets criminals, and really come away with it feeling, you know, bad for his victims. I found it very difficult myself when reading up on the Brazilian Maniac to find, you know, to find it in myself to be particularly sympathetic. I guess the only thing you can say as far as, you know, empathy goes and sympathy is that, you know, these people, they did have families as well. So you do have to think about the families of his victims more so than his victims, I think, in this place. But it's still not, it's still something I find particularly difficult to deal with myself. Now, I do want to... go ahead and give you guys some insight into where you can kind of look up more on this very fascinating individual. So you're going to want to start a good place to start is the is at a website, www.gutenberg.us articles, typing his name in, a number of articles come up with the World Heritage Encyclopedia with a list compiled of various serial killers from Brazil. There's a number of articles dedicated to him there. There is important to note that he is also referenced in the popular show Criminal Minds. There is a Rolling Stone article dedicated to his crimes and his, you know, overarching cultural impact, I suppose you could say. There's been a number of mini documentaries on him. Predominantly on YouTube. You can also take a look at an article written by James Donahue, The Mind of James Donahue, Brazil's Mass Killer Pedro Filho. So you might take a look at his work. He's a retired author and journalist and historian. He worked on daily and weekly newspapers in Michigan and Arizona. He's wrote a number of newspaper columns and editorial content for the past 20 years, and he conducted an interview with him. He has his own site dedicated to it, www.perdurabo.tennet. So he did a biopic on Pedro Filho. And There are a few books. There's not very many yet dedicated to him. Again, it's kind of hard with people that are still alive. It makes it a little bit more difficult because people tend to do books on people that are dead, making it rather difficult for people to, you know, really acquire stuff on them. You know, as I said, you know, people tend to wait. When he dies, I'm sure that there'll be more work dedicated to him, and I'm sure that there'll be films dedicated to him as well. But at the moment, that is what we've got today. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will return in the future with more content, of course. Oh, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that you can also look at you can obviously look at places like Wikipedia and other encyclopedias, but I think you want to start with the Gutenberg site, and you want to start with the Rolling Stone site. They have got access to interviews, direct interviews, and that's really a good place to – that's always a really good place to start. I think interviews, when you lack, you know, when you lack literary sources for the most part, you definitely want to listen to interviews. You definitely want to listen to people who talked to the individual, and definitely want to take a look at those articles people have published where they have actually talked to the person and gotten more details from that person. So I do want to mention that and reiterate that before I sign off. Obviously, you guys will catch me Sunday with Straight Football Talk. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that January for Straight Football Talk is now booked solid with interviews. I'm going to get back with you all Sunday. We're going to bring up all the interviews we've got lined up. It's quite the lineup to give you guys a little bit of a sample of what we are going to be cooking with. We do have a great lineup starting on the 7th. We're talking to Jonathan Wells and Derek Martin on January 7th. We also have Mike Jones on the 21st, who made The Tackle, the epic play that is considered to be the in the top three greatest football plays ever made, the touchdown-saving tackle in the Rams-Titans Super Bowl. So we've got a very busy January for Straight Football Talk. We're very excited about that. I do, again, want to reiterate, guys, sorry about the technical difficulties at the beginning. We will get those ironed out in the future. That's all I've got for you guys today with Bareback Facts. Hope you enjoyed the show. And, of course, I will update the schedule for you guys, and I'll be back next week. I want to also mention one more announcement before I get out of here, and that is we're going to be doing some short story narrations in the coming days. But in the meantime, I hope you guys will enjoy the remainder of your holidays. Try not to get too drunk for the New Year's, and hopefully you all enjoyed the holidays so far, whatever holidays you happen to be celebrating. I do thank you for taking the time to listen to the show, and I do hope that you get back home safely. Meet again. This has been the Bareback Facts. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.